Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good and the Bad and the Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I'm your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me as always is my co-host, Fred Moreland, who had some fun with Zoom accounts today. How are you, sir?
Gotta love the just the sloppy work of, not even sloppy, just the tedious work of input of data and making accounts and shit. So I'm just great. It's wonderful. We're going to keep a episode short today because I have actual work to do for my actual job, and love that. So let's go. Yeah,
absolutely. You know what else is tedious, Fred? All this talk about Kenny Omega going to WWE.
That is fucking tedious.
We have to touch on it. There's been a conversation about Kenny Omega potentially going to WWE and WWE wanting him, which of course they would. Kenny Omega is a top five worker, and like, he's probably the biggest star outside of the WWE bubble in the professional wrestling world today. And I don't think that's really much of a hot take. He's huge in Japan. He's huge in the States, and everywhere he goes, he comes across as a megastar, except Mexico. But Mexico is very centralized away from any other markets, where if you are from the States, it's hard to get a huge reaction right away. Like the Young Bucks, everybody was silent to them. But that's also Mexico.
It's also AAA production too.
Yeah, it's a very different ecosystem in professional wrestling. And that's not a bad thing. It's just something you have to contextualize. Yeah. Well, the big thing with Omega, he almost went to WWE after his New Japan contract expired at the end of 2018, beginning of 2019. But AEW came about, and that's why he ended up picking that promotion. So there's a little bit more actual meat to the bone, but it's still a bunch of malarkey. Like, I don't see Omega as the kind of guy, with especially how he views pro wrestling, to want that WWE run just because you have to go to WWE at some point in your career. I just don't see it at this point, especially with what NXT has become, because that was honestly the draw for a lot of these guys, because they still got to be pro wrestlers within that portion of WWE.
Well, and also money is a pretty good reason to go to WWE. Now, Kenny's, I'm sure, doing all right financially. I don't think there's any reason to be concerned about, Tony Khan being outbid. But is it possible it'll go to WWE? Yeah, maybe. He's talked before about how it is kind of, was at least at one point, appealing to him to the idea of going to WWE, where a lot more stuff would be laid out for him and there'd be a lot less stress on him to come up with stuff. Look, I mean, it's not out of question that he'll sign with him. It's definitely not. But I think that what started all this was basically the Fightful report of WWE would like to sign Kenny Omega if they can, which is kind of like, you know, me becoming a Cleveland Guardians reporter and be like, hey, I heard that if they could, Cleveland Guardians would like to sign Aaron Judge. I think that worked out very well for them. And then everyone on the internet reacting by going, oh man, Aaron Judge is going to Cleveland. It's going to happen. I can tell you, as a Cleveland fan, they will not spend that amount of money even for Aaron Judge. But yeah, I mean, it's just the echo chamber effect we've had over the past week is very stupid and silly. But I mean, it doesn't mean that it can't happen. It's on the table. If he feels, they'll negotiate with him, I'm sure. If for nothing else, Kenny Omega will get leverage from WWE on AEW for their contract offer and vice versa. And then it'll be up to him to decide which situation he likes will work better. But of course, we all know that it'll end up in MLW.
And the world of MLW never stops. I hate when Fightful does this, and I feel like I am the kind of person who can comment on it because my entire business is to draw clicks. Being with the Vikings Wire and USA Today, you're trying to find stories that will draw attention, but there's a line. There is actually reporting news and just trying to draw clicks with based on something like that. Like you said, like, oh, WWE'd like to sign Kenny Omega. No shit, Sherlock, they'd like to sign him. Let's actually be substantial with it. If there's nothing substantial, then don't write the piece. Like, it, to me, as somebody who tries to be a real journalist in this sense, I only want to write something that is substantial, has merit behind it. And you know what doesn't have merit? Saying, oh, WWE wants to sign one of the best fucking wrestlers in the world. To me, that's just hearsay. That's being a common sense individual. It's not actually reporting anything. It's not being newsworthy. You're not using any kind of journalism with it. It's, to me, that's garbage. And I don't, when I write stuff for Vikings Wire, it's okay. I hear from an insider that there was a report that the Vikings and Brian Flores are interested in bringing back Patrick Peterson. Okay. There's a little bit of substance behind it because a local legit insider is explicitly saying it, not, oh, we would like to sign him, even though it's, hey, he's under contract with another company and there's literally nothing other than that other than hearsay. Like, I know that this person is 100% credible. I know that they've broken major news stories in this market in the past. And it makes sense for the Vikings to bring back Peterson because of how he played last year and the fact that he's going to be inexpensive. So there's a ton of things that line up, and that's why I ended up publishing the piece. Here, it's a whole bunch of malarkey, and I hate it. I think it's a bunch of crap, and I think we can all be better.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that, like, Sean Ross Sapp, I'm sure, did not just, like, make this up out of the ether. You know, it was just like, I'm going to sit down and say WWE wants to sign Kenny Omega, if possible. I'm sure there's someone I'm not accusing you of saying that. I'm just being clear to the listener.
Content.
It's, yeah, it's not meaningful fluff. To it's, me.
No, it, there's no, like, where's the substance? And yeah. this isn't trying to bury Sean Ross Sapp or whoever wrote the piece. It's just the general concept, because so many sites do this. It's not a specific Fightful thing. It is not, like, you'll see sites like Wrestling Inc., Wrestling News, like Cage Side Seats. They all do it.
Yeah.
And being that I'm in the business of it, if it's not substantial where I feel like I can actually be relaying real information to you, then I don't think it's worth it. And based on that report, I don't think it was worth it either. And it's, quite frankly, it's anytime I see that kind of stuff is disappointing.
Yeah, I'm sure that it worked for what Fightful was trying to do business wise, but I don't know if they even considered the possible ramifications of just like floating, not even a report, just like a, you know, whatever you want to call that, and letting that snowball out of control because they didn't like get out in front of the story to like clarify to the public. So we just have had all this silly speculation, but. Here we are. This is what the media is. This is what we do online. Just an Ouroboros of crapping in our own mouths.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It kind of is what it is, and I hate it. But look, it also draws money. So like, there are ways you can frame the conversation where you can still draw that money and get some real substance behind it. I didn't think this was it, and to me, that's the frustrating part. But I could yell about this stuff for hours and hours because this is my career and my life. So, but let's talk about something a little bit more substantial, Fred. That is the Ring of Honor TV tapings. Ring of Honor television debuts tonight at, I believe, 7 o'clock Eastern on Honor Club. I'm very intrigued by this because we've heard a lot of different things from the tapings that these might be like 10 match shows. We don't even know how long they're going to be, how they're going to be structured. Is it going to be like an episode of NWA Power where you get a bunch of like 4 to 6 minute matches where, okay, you have a lot of matches, but you're not getting a lot of time. And then is it going to feel like Dark? Because we know it's taped in the same building and
the same day.
I believe it's AR Fox and Claudio Castagnoli for the Ring of Honor World title as the main event of the first show, which I think is a nice little touch, but what are we going to get from these? And I think that element is very, very intriguing because there's so many different ways it can go. But I will say, I'm willing to give Tony Khan at least two tapings to really figure it out before I make any kind of discernible judgment, because I think he's going to be using this first batch to really tell him what he can and cannot do and get away with.
Yeah, I'm just hopeful that we'll actually, like, it'll be an actual show rather than, you know, like a AW Dark / Dark Elevation thing where it's just a bunch of squashes. Like, you've got to have more than that. And I'm a little pessimistic given the, let me just pull up the first listing of tapings that's on Cage Match. Listen, there's going to be some spoilers here. So if you're super hepped up about this, might want to skip ahead a few minutes. But there's matches on here, like, some of them sound like they'll be competitive, like Timothy Thatcher against Wheeler Yuta for the pure title. I think that'll be good. But there's also Eddie Kingston against Ben Deho, I'm guessing, D-E-H-O, which I assume is a pun there. But, like, that's not going to be long, man. I don't think that's going to have much length behind it at all. And there's a couple other matches on this first night that kind of look like that. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. I have concerns about what Ring of Honor is going to be. And in 24 hours, we'll know what it's going to be. But fingers crossed that it delivers. You know, that's kind of where I am right now.
Yeah, I'm hoping it does, too. I think we'll all be better for it if and when it does deliver. But we'll see. I'm going to keep a completely open mind with this entire thing because, look, we had questions about AEW and what Tony Khan was going to be when this company first started.
Yeah.
And we kept being pleasantly surprised. I mean, there were rough parts, and there still are. Nothing's perfect in this company. But compared to other bookers in this country, like, I don't think we've had a better booker over the last 20 years than Tony Khan, except for maybe stretches of ROH, Gabe Sapolsky, and Jim Cornette. I'd say those would be the only two real contenders for, like, this style of a really good cohesive booking. And even then, I don't think they surpass Khan. So I think we're in a great spot for professional wrestling. And I just think we have to be patient, especially with how Khan decides he wants to continue with Ring of Honor, because he was very clear about wanting to keep the legacy of Ring of Honor and having these be really separate entities.
Yeah. And look, I think if anyone gets the benefit of the doubt, this, you know, in 2023, as far as booking, it's Tony Khan. Yeah, I think he just won his third Booker of the Year award from the Observer a week ago. But we'll see. Again, there's a little pessimism going around, and I have a bit of it, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. And that's pretty much it for the news. I think we should touch on this one piece from AEW before we end up talking about Revolution, because otherwise there's really not a whole lot to talk about. Eddie Kingston quit AEW. I think this is something we need to discuss, and it wasn't aired on television. You saw the beginnings of it when it was him and Ortiz just fighting to the back, and then they kind of eliminated themselves from the Face of the Revolution ladder match. And then in something that a clip that aired on AEW social media, Lexi Nair was interviewing Eddie Kingston. She asked him about their brawl, and he just looked at the camera. He's like, "I quit AEW," took his stuff and left the building. And that, if you've been following him on social media, he's been kind of alluding to this, being really upset with the promotion, being upset with how he was booked, this, that, and the other thing. And this is kind of a culmination to it. And I think, one, it's been brilliantly done by Kingston. Two, I think this means he's probably going to be full-time Ring of Honor, which honestly is going to be great for him. I would not be shocked if he beats Claudio for the title and they try to build this promotion around him. Especially with, I think we're going to see Blackpool Combat Club, Dark Order in some form, feuding, and maybe that ends up leading to blood and guts. I think this could end up being very interesting. What was your take when you saw it?
You know, I think it's a good move to kind of bolster Ring of Honor with a pretty big name. I do think that the second half of 2022 for Eddie Kingston was a real bust, like from July on, once the incident with it was Sammy Guevara, right, where they had the argument backstage that escalated into fist fight. But the second half of that year is just brutal for him. You had the little Eddie Kingston and Ortiz tag team leading into, like, they haven't even had a match other than being in the ladder match last night together. So I don't know. I feel like he needs a chance to reheat, and hopefully he will be able to do that in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I hope so too, because Kingston rules, and obviously there's a myriad of factors as to why his push wasn't working or didn't apex it nearly as well as it should have, but those are conversations for another day, because Fred, it is time.
Actually, I'm going to cut you off. Uh-oh. Because there is, I remember just now, and I apologize that this is screwing with you live on air. But I do remember another news story we should go through, which is that last week the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Awards were announced. As you can tell, I did not prepare a run sheet for this show, but we should probably run through that real quick. What do you say?
Let's do it, man.
All right, I got it open right now. The MVP Wrestler of the Year, Luthez Ric Flair Award. Jon Moxley won for the second time in his career, joining a very small group of two-time winners. Harley Race, Ric Flair, Misawa, Kobashi, Jericho, Cena, Tanahashi, AJ Styles, and Kenny Omega. That is a ridiculous list, and I don't know. It'll be very interesting to watch the Jon Moxley Hall of Fame debate, I think, this year, because I think he's getting added back onto the ballot. Roman Reigns was second, Will Ospreay third, Okada and Siri round out the top five, Jericho, MJF, and CM Punk were all 6 through 8, and Bryan Danielson was at 10. And most outstanding, unsurprisingly and deservedly, went to Will Ospreay, who had just one of the best in-ring years of all time. Bryan Danielson second, Moxley fifth, Dax Harwood finished sixth in his personal attempt to win that award. this very sweaty grab for it, and then Takeshita at 9. Those are kind of the two big awards. I don't think either win is a big surprise. You know, you could definitely, if you're a WWE guy, make an argument for Roman Reigns, and if you're a work rate guy, you really would have to lean on that hard for Will Ospreay, though I think that's not a bad argument. I think the AEW placements at least were pretty reasonable in both awards. Any thoughts, Tyler?
I really have no issues with any of that. I think Jon Moxley being the MVP, I think, is perfect, especially with how much he's meant to AEW. Look at what Moxley was supposed to be doing, and then look at what he actually did. The man was supposed to take a vacation multiple times, and they ended up strapping him up again.
Yep.
And again, they strapped him up twice to carry the company through unfortunate circumstances, both of which were caused by CM Punk, one via injury, one via being an asshole at a press conference. And they decided to go back to Jon Moxley because he was the guy you can rely on. He's going to put the company on his back and get them through. And you know what? He did a fantastic job of doing that. And I love it. I think you have to give it to him. And then in just terms of work rate, Will Ospreay is second to none. Like, he had 4-star matches with what, 20 different opponents across like 7 promotions. Like, this is an insane individual in every positive connotation. Will Ospreay is incredibly special. He is in the ring, he is a genuinely brilliant worker, and he has figured out going from a straight flippy do guy just doing spot fest, learned how to sell. I mean, he had some struggles for a couple of years being way over dramatic, but he's figured it out. He's figured out his in-ring character, and he's working it to perfection. And it's not just, hey, we're going to do one match. We're going to build a story. And look at what they've done so far with Okada. Look at now what he's building with Kenny Omega. That man is going to win multiple belts at the Tokyo Dome. And he may be the first gaijin to ever win or defend a world title in New Japan history at the Tokyo Dome, or at the very minimum at Wrestle Kingdom. That is because I think Brock Lesnar did, but I don't fact check me on that. I'm not 100% sure. I know a gaijin has never won the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, and I think that is something that Ospreay is going to be the first ever to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's just setting up to have a completely insane career, and kudos to him for all he accomplished this past year. Other quick ones, real fast, Tag Team of the Year unsurprisingly went to FTR, then the Briscoes and Young Bucks, Usos fourth, Acclaimed fifth. Not even the WWE guys could get a, you know, put that much effort into voting the Usos up. Best done interviews, MJF 1, Moxley 2, CM Punk 3. Again, pretty basic. Promotion of the year went to AEW over Stardom and then WWE, which I'm not entirely sure if this is a typo, because with these tables, Dave does occasionally get typos, but I'm not sure.
Dave did say that the Stardom number is supposed to be like 2,500 or 2,600. He said that was a typo because somebody asked him on Twitter and he said it's supposed to be X instead of Y.
What I was wondering about is it showing WWE without a single first place vote, which I find very interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't. Again, I can't say if that's true or not. I should probably check with them. Dynamite won weekly TV show of the year by a big margin over SmackDown. Match of the year went to the G1 Okada Ospreay match, right over the last FTR Briscoes match, and then the Tokyo Dome Okada Ospreay, and then the first FTR Briscoes match for the top four. So a couple of rematches there. Moxley, Canada US MVP. Darby Allin finished second in the non-heavyweight Hodge Award behind Hijo del Vikingo, and Siri won Women's Wrestling MVP over top of Bianca Belair and then Jamie Hayter. Actually, you could have combined their vote totals and she still would have won, so good year for her. What I'm going to bring up last, because I'm kind of just reading off a fucking newsletter to you, but the most interesting thing I thought was the Best Booker Award, which Tony Khan won by 45 votes over Rossi Ogawa, with Papa H finishing third behind those two. And I thought it was very interesting that Dave Meltzer has said that he usually doesn't comment on the Best Booker Award, and then wrote a whole ass paragraph about how he thought Paul Levesque was the unquestionable, should have been the unquestioned winner of the award, which I thought was very interesting in a I think that's wrong kind of way. I think you could make the argument for him as well, but I also think that, like, Tony Khan did a good job of steering the ship through all the injuries and drama from Brawl Out and did about as good as anyone could. I mean, just I'll point in the Forbidden Door build working out as well as it did, considering that, like, half their roster was eaten by sharks. And I also think you could make the argument for Rossi Ogawa. I mean, Stardom certainly appears to be the number two promotion in Japan. I know that's kind of a meme to argue about who's in that spot. But I think that, at least for him over here, it seems like they have done that. And I think he's done a good job getting that done.
So is Rossi actually the booker of Stardom?
That's always the question.
Is he just the placeholder?
Isn't that the question with most Japanese promotions outside of New Japan? I mean, there's always seems to be like a debate who's actually booking Dragon Gate. There was a whole thing about, was Nasawa booking Noah at all, that Dave kind of fell into the trap with that because of basically a scammer of sorts, sending him bad info. I don't know. He's commonly credited as it, but Rossi Ogawa is, but I don't know if he still holds that position after the purchase of the company.
Yeah, it's... Hey, either way, I know Stardom is a tremendously booked promotion, and it's really hard to argue against it. But I don't really have any issue with these, except Dave Meltzer saying that Triple H was the unquestioned booker of the year. Look, if you want to make the argument that business didn't fall based on the scandals of Vince McMahon, and you want to credit Triple H for that, I don't see how you really can credit Triple H for that, because it's WWE and they've, for the most part, remained pretty stagnant. They've had a couple peaks, couple valleys. Yeah, but it's not like their business took off. It's not like we saw a consistent 20% growth across the board going, or they didn't even go from like 1.8 million viewers on Raw on average to 2 million on a consistent level. There's been a lot up and down, and the little changes he's made haven't exactly been substantial. So I don't see a real argument that's based in good faith. And this isn't an attack on Dave Meltzer. This is just me personally opining. I just don't see an argument in good faith saying that Triple H was a better booker this year than anybody in professional wrestling. I'm willing to listen to anybody who wants to make that argument, But tell me that they did a better job than Tony Khan with a straight face and with actual data to back it up, considering that Tony Khan literally booked a show of the year with everything that you mentioned in Forbidden Door. And not only that, dealing with the politics of everything with Forbidden Door. To me, there is no argument, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I just agree with Dave. I think that, well, part of the thing is you should consider, you know, work over the year, and Triple H only did half a year. Also, I do see a strength, you know, the Sami Zayn storyline getting really hot like it did with the fan base. But at the same time, it's not exactly like it was a perfect record. I think the biggest criticism you could probably levy in terms of creative at Paul Levesque, outside of like just kind of being very staid and conservative, is the whole Bray Wyatt return being a total bust. And I think he's lost all momentum that was there originally, which they had built up. So I think that's a big strike against him. But, you know, you could make that argument. You could say WWE is the biggest company and they actually, like, had a better year than they have in a while. And you could make that argument. I don't agree with it, and I don't think it's a great argument, but that's what it is. Anyways, I just thought that was interesting and worth discussing for a moment.
No, I think it absolutely is. But the thing with the Zayn storyline is they just continued something that they didn't even want. And it wasn't like, hey, the Acclaimed all of a sudden got red hot. Tony was building them up for multiple years. And then he saw, hey, these guys are getting red hot. Let's roll with it. And then you had those great reactions from the crowd at both All Out and Grand Slam. And then it culminated with a title win. And they were still hot. It wasn't, hey, we accidentally stumbled into something. Let's maybe go with this. And then they didn't even pay it off. And I know you can't talk about the mistakes at Elimination Chamber for Levesque's case for Booker of the Year 2022. But I'm sorry. It wasn't like they had this brilliant idea with Zayn. It was supposed to be a couple week storyline that just evolved and evolved and evolved.
I will say to their benefit is that for once in WWE history, recent history, they did not instantly see a storyline getting over and then decide to shut it down to stick to their original plan of not pushing that person in question. That is probably the best thing you can say about Triple H.
Wow, what a ringing endorsement.
I know, right? But hey, making the obvious move sometimes, it's still the right move and still worthy of like, hey, you didn't screw it up, congrats. Again, yeah. Not much of a ringing endorsement. However, I'm done with this shit. Tyler, I got the old thermometer out here. It's a little infrared one. I'm pointing it at things to see how hot they are. That's right, baby. But you got a pay-per-view on Sunday. It's time for the heat check.
Boy, am I glad it's not a rectal one. Let's get this over with.
All right. So what we're going to do, like the last time we talked up a preview to pay-per-view, is we're going to go through the card. And I'm going to have Tyler share his thoughts on how hot he is into this angle, basically, or this storyline, this match, the build. I'm very good at describing things today. I am a professional. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being that he is as hyped as possible, Mojo Rawley would look at him and say, that is entirely too hyped, son. And 1 is he is not excited at all. So we're going to start with the bottom of the card from Wikipedia on Revolution. We currently have 8 matches announced, and I'm sure that there's a couple others coming, but I'm not going to worry about those because they're probably on the pre-show or just like the 7th match from the top. So let's start with Christian Cage and Jack Perry in a no-holds-barred match. Tyler, where are you at? 1-10.
6. I like that this match is happening. I really don't like that it's happening on this show. I feel like with the angle of Christian coming back, I feel like this is just a little too rushed. I think there's more meat on the bone. And to me, that's the frustrating part. It's not that we're going to get some type of culmination or evolution with the storyline. I think how they've gone about it in this portion of the feud has just felt a little rushed, and that's why I'm a little down on it. You can see what the finish is going to be a mile away, and maybe Tony Khan has something up his sleeve for a swerve, but it feels like at the end of the match, or to actually win the match, Jack Perry is going to hit the concerto on Christian. They teased it last week on Dynamite. Christian ended up hitting him in the nuts when Jack was finally going for it, and then you had that weird promo this week on Dynamite where Jack was tearing up and they kept showing like a little video montage of the concerto, and like I think this is going to be a really good match. I just wish that the build in this segment of the feud was better. I just don't think it has been.
Fair enough. I like the past couple weeks. Once Christian came back, I think he's done a fantastic job character work wise. And I really liked his promo last night. And I think that's really carrying the feud for me. I probably would go a 7 on this one. I think given all the injury layoff time with Christian and also Luchasaurus, that, you know, it's probably fine just finishing up, getting it done while he can. Because if you wait around, you know, who knows? But I do think this is probably this might be a spot where it would be better if AEW was doing like 6 or 7 pay-per-views a year, you know, just so they'd have something in 2 months that they could build this properly to. But this will be fine. I think it'll be a good match.
I think it'll be a good match too, but I just wish they would have done a little bit more.
Speaking of short builds, let's talk about the House of Black against the Elite for the AEW World Trios Championship. 1 to 10. Tyler, where are you?
7. And
really?
I really don't care about the build. House of Black shows up and they kind of tease that they want the Elite. And then they make the challenge, and then they show up and beat the living shit out of them this past week on Dynamite. This feud is built, I want those titles, you have them, and we're going to beat your ass for them. It really feels that simple. The spooky stuff has basically just been the lights go out, and they go kick ass. And I've wanted to see these teams wrestle really ever since House of Black kind of came into the company as a unit. And then once we got these trios belts, this is one of the feuds that I earlined and underlined and circled, or however you want to identify it. This is one I want to see. I want to see Aleister Black get in there with Kenny Omega. I want to see like Kenny Omega Lite Buddy Matthews go in there with Omega. I want to see them what the Young Bucks can do with a huge base like Brody King and vice versa. I think this is going to be a tremendous match. Like the floor on this match is 4.25. The ceiling is limitless, and I want to see what these guys can do. And if they're given 20 to 40 minutes, like I'm guessing they're probably going to get like 22 minutes. Like I think these guys can have a hell of a match. And to me, like this is the epitome of what AEW started to be, right? Hey, we're going to go in there and we're going to have great wrestling. This feels like an opener to kick off a show and hopefully project that out to be red freaking hot. And I can't wait.
Yeah, I think it should be a fantastic match, but I'm lower on the build just because it's been over like the past 2 or 3 weeks with just very short angles, nothing to really heat it up too much, especially with Rampage. Those segments just being like, ah, oh, they're spooky bullshit with the lights. It's never Sabu. Yeah, I'm not super into the build, but it is going to be a great match, and I think it'll definitely deliver.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club Slab Packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Next, Tyler. We are looking at for the AEW Women's World Championship, a three-way match with Ruby Soho and Saraya challenging Jamie Hayter.
I'm at a 5. Okay. And let me kind of walk you through this, because in reality, I don't think this has been greatly built. But my intrigue for this match is in three phases. One, I love watching Jamie Hayter work. I think she's tremendous. She's got a fantastic physique as far as being a tremendous professional wrestler. She is very muscular. She's got a tremendous look. Her gear looks awesome. Just the whole package of Jamie Hayter, I just absolutely love. I think she's the best women's worker in North America. And I think the only one that could give her a run for her money is Mercedes Moné. And we saw that at Battle in the Valley. I just love watching her wrestle. And I think she's got two interesting opponents. Saraya, who I'm very interested to see, she's in a big spot in a non-tag match. How is she going to handle this? Is she going to show any growth or evolution from her entrance to the company, which was incredibly shaky? Like, she has not worked a lot as a professional wrestler since she came back and joined AEW. How is she going to look? How are the interactions with her and Hayter going to be? And then you have Ruby Soho, who is a stalwart worker. She kind of works to the level of her competition, I think is the best way. She's not going to carry a match, but she's not going to drag one down either. So I think her interactions with Hayter are going to be great. I'm very curious to see what her interactions with Saraya are going to look like. Are they going to be really sloppy? Are they going to be clean? Like, I think the ceiling of this match is 4.5 if it's put together well and everybody works really hard. I think the floor of this match is 2 stars because it's a 3-way, and this could go really off the rails with some of the performances we've historically seen with both Saraya and Ruby Soho. But the real intrigue for me is, how does this feud with this female NWO versus the AEW originals go? Where does Ruby Soho lie? Like, some of this has been really bad, but I'm still intrigued because I think that there's an end game and Tony Khan's just been dragging his feet. And I think we could see something here at the end of this match. And that's why my intrigue is as high as it is. There's a lot of moving parts and components here, but we could end up with something either really bad that we get to bury or something pretty special that we get to talk about and are pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, there is a lot of variability on this one, but it will be really interesting to see where it falls. I'm not super positive that it's going to work out well, but I guess we'll see. I do think that there's a lot of questions in my mind what exactly they're going to do going forward with Saraya, just because there's so much, I'm not even sure she's been doing a great job. I feel like this heel turn has been very much a attempt to bail it out. And I guess we will see. Next up is banned from ringside, the Jericho Appreciation Society, in the singles match between Chris Jericho and Ricky Starks.
Okay, so I want to point this out. Did you notice that it's not an everybody banned from ringside match anymore? It is now just the Jericho Appreciation Society. Did you catch that, Fred?
I did not. Do you think some hijinks are going to come from this?
Watch it be Action Andretti. He's been the only other constant in this feud. And it being a 2-on-5 feud is kind of weird. You would think Ricky Starks would have more people with him, or they would try to loop some other people in, and they just haven't. So to me, it kind of signals that we could get some hijinks here, and I'm very intrigued to see what happens. As far as the match, I'm probably at like an 8. I really want to see Ricky Starks have this huge spot with Chris Jericho on a pay-per-view. I want to see what kind of match they build. I want to see how Jericho tries to elevate Ricky Starks, and I want to see that Ricky Starks shine, because I think, look, we've talked ad nauseum, and a lot of people have, about, oh, you don't get anything from a Chris Jericho feud. Bull fucking shit. Ricky Starks is a damn mega star at this point, and I think that we're going to start having conversations about, should he eventually take the belt off of MJF, and when he should be a world champion, not if. And that is if you're not already there, because I think he's a future world champion and you can just see it. The in-ring work is really catching up to his charisma and what he's able to do on the mic. And Jericho really comes out with these big spots and does a great job with it. And I'm very excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this one too. I actually have liked the build for the most part. I like that last... the segment from last week's Dynamite a good bit, especially with the way Stark sold it at the end. I think that really made it. But yeah, I like this, and I think it should be a good match if Jericho is in good shape, because it does seem like he's, look, I feel weird saying this, but I think he's fluctuating a bit in terms of just how in shape he is recently. But if he's all, if his physical condition is perfect or as perfect as it can be at this point in his career, he should have a very good match with Ricky Starks, and you know, I think it'll be a lot of fun.
At the very least, it's going to be chaotic. And it's going to be engaging. The wrestling may not be like perfect. I mean, Jericho's 53. There's only a certain level that you can truly expect from him. But if they build it based on a really good story, kind of like how like Cody and Dustin, that was a traditional old school wrestling match with a lot of story intertwined. They built something like that. I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be that, because that was just different real life brothers, and they were kind of culminating a feud that they didn't get to in WWE. But if they can build a story-type territory match, this could be great.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun, and I hope it is. He also, I mean, he still has a great mind for the business, Jericho does, and I think he's going to have some very interesting ideas for this. I do think I had not considered an Action Andretti heel turn to join the Jericho Appreciation Society. I don't know how I feel about that. Honestly, I don't think I like it, but at the same time, I don't know what Andretti's direction is going to be after this. I feel like it probably would mirror the Daniel Garcia storyline that we had a little too much, but it could be interesting. Our next match is for the TNT Championship. It's between the challenger Wardlow against the champion Samoa Joe.
Oh man, I genuinely don't know how I feel about this. The build has been both great and really bad. I'm gonna put this as at a 6. Wardlow has cooled off considerably over the past 6 months.
He still gets great reactions. That's the thing I always think.
Maybe that's just with me. I think his cycle of what he's been doing on shows and then coming back. I did like how they built up this match with the hair piece and him talking about his dad and why he was growing it out. I thought that added a lot of juice. We talked about that on this show, and I think I was way more into that than you were, because I think you thought it was really clunky, which I totally understand as well.
No, I actually liked that promo quite a bit. I just thought that the first half of the segment with Jim Ross was kind of meh. But, I liked the once he started firing up, Wardlow, I thought, did a really good job in that promo.
Yeah, I thought he did too. I'm very intrigued to see where this goes. But we have Powerhouse Hobbs that's going to challenge for the ROH TV title on next week's Dynamite, which to me signals that Samoa Joe may lose both belts. It could also be the continuation of his dominance. I'm very intrigued to see the direction. I don't currently see what the direction is right now, because it could go about 5 different ways. So I guess I put it at about a 5. I'm not super thrilled with everything they've done with this build, but they've done enough to keep me engaged.
Yeah, I think it's been a decent enough build, but I think at the same time, like, this could be a really fun match. Joe can still go. Granted, it helped that it was Darby Allin trying to kill himself opposite him. But I think in general, it was a good performance. And I think this could be a lot of fun. Next up is Adam Page and Jon Moxley in Texas Death. They don't even say it's a match. They're just saying Texas Death.
Oh, 10. Sorry, 9.9, because I am not as excited about this match as I was about Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay. But
okay, fair enough.
How can you not be thrilled with this match? The build has been excellent. They took an oopsie where Adam Page got legit knocked out and concussed, and they turned it into a great story. That promo by Jon Moxley where he's bleeding buckets
in
that stairwell was phenomenal. And then you just have the camera pan down, and you see the pools of blood as he's screaming into the camera and basically saying, you know what? You're a great wrestler. You're a good guy, but you aren't a psychopath like me. and you don't go to that. Like, we talk about Edge going to that place.
That place, yeah, because like, he gets his goofy looks and all that crap. Mm-hmm.
Moxley goes to that place, but that place is, I'm going to fucking murder you, and there is no memeing about it. It's just Moxley's a cold-blooded killer.
And I think you may be over-representing just how spectacular that murder would be.
It would be incredible. It would be Saw-like. Very creative, very gory. But this is going to be incredible. Can Adam Page, who, I know, I was listening to the Dynamite review by Joe Lanza before we ended up starting to hit record, and one thing that he said that I found interesting that I hadn't really considered, the Texas Deathmatch might be becoming Adam Page's thing, because he's had a few of them, and he's won them all.
Yep.
So it is Moxley setting himself up to make lose in a match that I believe the only other Texas Deathmatch that Moxley has been in AEW was with Lance Archer, and he lost.
That's right. Now,
he beat Lance Archer in 2020 in the Tokyo Dome at Wrestle Kingdom 14, but he lost the rematch in All Elite Wrestling for that IWGP US title. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens here. All I know is this. Presumably earlier in the night, we're going to have Christian Cage and Jungle Boy in a hardcore match. This is going to be a death match. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Panes of Glass, doors. Like, we're going to see all kinds of weird things with barbed wire. We could see a homicidal fork. This is going to be bloody. It's going to be gory. And it's going to be great. This could be a 5-star death match, but I would expect it to at least come in a 4.25.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it, and it should be a great match. That leaves us with two more. First of all, the 4-way for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. The challengers are the Acclaimed, Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett, and Orange Cassidy and Danhausen against the Guns, Austin and Colton, who are the champions, of course. How hyped are you for this, Mr. Tyler?
Oh, I don't know. Listen, I'll be at a 10 hyped if we get Jeff Jarrett winning a tag team title in AEW, because I think that's the direction you need to go here. But I'd probably put it myself at a 3. I genuinely don't care, Fred, about this match, other than I want to see Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal win these belts and give a fresh element to this tag team division. And maybe they end up being the ones to surrender the belts to a team like Top Flight. And you're putting over a young tag team that you can make into big stars. I think the writing was on the wall the second you showed Orange Cassidy and Danhausen in the back. I thought it was really cool how they got there. Mm-hmm. As far as in the tag team battle royal, which honestly wasn't that great anyways, but I did think it was cool that, one, you're getting Danhausen on the show, which is just fun, and he's been booked so incredibly well in this company. It's hard to book comedy wrestlers really well, and Tony Khan's done a great job with Danhausen. He's super over. Orange Cassidy is super over, and I think this match needed that element more than anything. I was very disappointed Aussie Open isn't on this card, but that could change. I can't remember what those geeks are called.
Varsity Athletes.
Yeah, the Varsity Athletes and the Lucha Brothers, they kind of set something up. Maybe that's a pre-show squash. Perhaps. But I would really like to see Aussie Open versus the Lucha Brothers to finish off the buy-in, to really try to sell this pay-per-view. We're not going to get that, but that was my hope. Yeah. And
I got to say, man, Aussie Open needs to avoid these damn tag team battle royals, because they were dumped from both of them like nothing. Not a great look for them. They gotta make sure they're getting booked well, because that was not what they got out of this one.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued.
And finally, our main event is Bryan Danielson. I can't talk. Bryan Danielson as the challenger against MJF for the AEW World Championship in a 60-minute Iron Man match.
9.5. This is a match that Bryan Danielson has historically been successful in. And this is a match you just know wrestling nerd MJF is thrilled to be a part of. I wonder how they're going to finish this match and what kind of shenanigans MJF is going to pull off to win this match. I've thought that he's going to do the Brock Lesnar thing when he wrestled Kurt Angle in that Iron Man match on SmackDown in 2003, where he grabs the chair and just clocks him over the head and hits him a bunch, gets the one DQ, and then he gets two quick pinfalls out of it. I think that could be a really interesting way to kind of help get him out, get them out of, hey, you don't want to make Bryan Danielson look weak because this is really his match, but you don't want to take the belt off MJF. I'd say there's about a 5% chance you get Bryan Danielson winning this belt. Because I think this is, they're trying to build an MJF tentpole reign. But I could also see Tony Khan being like, you know what? MJF is going to have his time and we need to go in a different direction for right now. I'm really intrigued to see the conclusion of this match and how they set it up, because that's going to speak volumes about how good of a booker Tony Khan is. Like, as far as continuing on, because we talked about some of the issues we've had with his booking, how there's been some lack of connective tissue, how there's been some lack of creativity, him going back to the well too many times with some basic concepts. I mean, every booker does that. They have the things that they really like. WWE is, oh, let's just do a ladder match. But
right.
If, like, Tony Khan has only been a booker for about 4 years now. At a certain point, everybody gets booker fatigue. Is Tony Khan starting to get into that booker fatigue with some of the things we've talked about? Or is he going to have a really creative finish to set this apart and have a satisfying conclusion with MJF still retaining the title and Bryan Danielson not looking like a geek? That, to me, is going to really tell us a lot about Tony Khan as a booker.
And also, don't forget that, like, it's not like just entirely up to him to have such a creative finish. I'm sure that with Bryan Danielson in particular, but also MJF, who's a creative guy there, that they'll be able to come up with a pretty good finish. So that should be very interesting. There's your card. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good show. I may not get to watch it until Monday. Tyler, we'll have to have a little chit chat off air about if we're going to do a special show for this one or not, or if I'm going to be too busy. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this show, and I think it should be it's lining up to be a really great one.
Yeah, it really is. I'm very excited for this show. This is probably the least excited I've been for an AEW pay-per-view in some time, but I'm still excited for it just because I think, like, there are only four pay-per-views. I feel like Revolution is going to be the one that traditionally is going to have the weakest cards, just with how everything sets up, how long it's going to take to get from Full Gear to Revolution, because it's 18 Dynamites. And then you have, like, Winter is Coming, and then you have another, like, big Dynamite show in between, and then you're obviously coming up to the summer where you're going to have Double or Nothing. And then we believe Forbidden Door 2. That is unconfirmed, but we've seen something floating around that says Saturday, June 24th. How true is that going to end up? I'm still intrigued for the show, but we'll see how it lands, because I think there's a possibility that this could be one of the early AEW pay-per-views that just falls flat.
You know, I don't think so. I think maybe, I think there's room to criticize the bill. It has felt kind of uneven at points, but when I look at these matches, like, for the most part, I am pretty hyped to watch most of these. Like, the tag team championship match is whatever. It almost feels like a pre-show match, to be honest. But I think that, just what we've got on this card is generally, I think the builds have been pretty good. And I think that they'll definitely deliver in terms of match quality. So I don't know. I am looking forward to it. I think it should be fun. We have one mailbag question that I'm going to get to in a second. But first, let's just run through some quick Rampage and Dynamite thoughts. I thought Rampage was actually pretty damn good last week, especially by, like, current Rampage standards. I really liked that Aussie Open Young Bucks tag match. It was... I can't remember the last Rampage match that I liked that much. I think I ended up going 4.25 on it. And I also liked the Action Andretti Sammy Guevara main event. I thought it was pretty good. like 3.5 stars level. Like, you know, if you have got time, you should check it out kind of match. But again, by Rampage standards, that's like a, that's nice, you know, to be able to get both of those on the same show. And so I liked it. I thought it was a pretty good episode.
I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch Rampage.
Tyler, you and your foosballs.
Yeah, you know what?
And your work. And yeah, money to live.
The second we're done with this, I'm actually going to turn on NFL Network right now. I need to watch the Combine.
The NFL. Who watches the NFL? Like, that's not even a big deal.
Oh, you know what? It's only the highest grossing sport in the fucking world.
That, yeah, sure. They all say that, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Football. Jabronis. I'll tell you the real sport. Professional wrestling. I was going to say Scrabble. Yeah.
I get to watch defensive linemen and linebackers do drills and run the 40-yard dash. So, woo.
It's cool. Hope you have fun doing that, to be honest. Okay, so Dynamite last night I thought was a good show, not a great show. I thought the best thing on the show by a wide margin in terms of match quality was the Face of the Revolution ladder match. I thought that was pretty darn good. I think I ended up going 4.5 on it. Thought about just going 4.25. Maybe I should have. But like Commander got himself a chance to show out on national TV and really only did 2 spots, but they were 2 insane spots. Eddie Kingston and Ortiz win the Work Smarter, Not Harder awards of the week, avoiding having to really do anything in the ladder match, which, hey, as a 38-year-old with a shitty body, I appreciate that.
The Togi Makabe award.
Hell yeah, man. I like that. But yeah, and like Andretti, I thought looked really good. Guevara looked good. Takeshita, man, I think they did a really nice job of continuing to build the Takeshita. Like, he's this close and Don Callis thing. He's coming back into the orbit, and I guess they're going to really kickstart that angle after the pay-per-view, which I think could be a really good angle because Don Callis is a great performer and Takeshita is a fantastic professional wrestler and has got more than his fair share of personality too. You know, and of course, Powerhouse Hobbs ended up winning in his hometown, setting up a match with either Wardlow or Joe next week, I think it is. I thought that was the highlight of the show. As far as promos, Moxley's was amazing. That's one of the best promos of the year right there. And I really like Brandon Danielson's too. I know that they plan to bleep out what he said, but they're also aware that it's going to be on the Fight service, Fight TV, and that's going to get up on Twitter like instantly, which it did. And so I really liked that segment too. I wish I could have heard Adam Page's promo, just a total cell phone there with like poor audio quality. Any other thoughts on that show?
It was fine. I don't know. Everything I kind of wanted to say about the show, I kind of already did. I will say that you sent me an interesting tweet from Eddie Kingston where he just says 1099 independent contractor. Man, he's leaning
today.
He's leaning into this bit hard, and I'm excited to see what where it goes.
Very good Twitter presence.
The old work is the new work, baby.
That's right. I just look forward to just like grumpy Eddie Kingston. Like, maybe we'll get a tweet from like the catering sucks anyway. Just, I don't know. Like, for some reason, the idea of that like just cracks me up. I Eddie Kingston's a great character, and I really do hope they get him back on track because I felt like he was really building to be like a top of the card kind of guy, and then the wheels came off over the last half year, basically. Let's see. Oh, one more news item that I just saw from the Super J-Cast. They, friends of ours on the Voices of Wrestling Network, they reported that Jay White's contract with New Japan has expired. He is set to leave the company. And also, everyone they have spoken to is convinced that he's going to WWE, as they say, to sit under the Shawn Michaels learning tree. Just the stupidest memes that would get made up in wrestling, man. Listen, but yeah,
I love Joel. Joel is one Joel's of the great, nicest man. Guys.
That was not a diss on Joel, to be clear. I just meant like,
I know he's everything he's so in general. He's so brilliant. I think that's interesting that everybody's convinced he's going to WWE. I also wouldn't be shocked if he just shows up in AEW, which I think would also be weird considering how he left New Japan, because everything is canonical. It feels like WWE ends up being the place. And quite frankly, what a fucking waste. Just so disappointing we never got a Jay White babyface run where I really thought he was going to be fully unlocked.
Well, maybe he'll get to go surfing with Shinsuke, you know.
Hey, you know what? Good for him. He gets to make a lot of money and not Tony do a lot Storm of work. And,
you know, go for that Togi Makabe award again. Okay, our last piece of business for the day, I do believe. I haven't checked the Discord yet today, but we do have an email question from Matthew. And he said, hello, gentlemen, which I feel like is a real upgrade on us. Plus, we're stealing someone's gimmick. We got Jesse Collins coming in with a gentleman's wrestling podcast. We can't beat gentlemen. I mean, look at Tyler. Shit. Do you have any thoughts or memories on Brock Lesnar's 2004 outing as a Minnesota Viking? Thank you for your time, Matt! !
I will be honest. I do. I remember following that because my entrance to professional wrestling was that aforementioned Lesnar Angle Iron Man match, and it was either the week before or the week after the Eddie Guerrero John Cena parking lot brawl, like Paul Heyman era SmackDown. That was my intro to pro wrestling. So Brock Lesnar was obviously a larger than life individual in the Twin Cities because he was a phenomenal amateur wrestler, won a national title for the University of Minnesota. And Lesnar was different. Having really not played football since his senior year of high school, and we're talking like a 7-year gap, he goes in and was the last cut of the Minnesota Vikings. They wanted to put him on the practice squad. He ended up saying no to that, and Lesnar could have been really, really good at
that's a big
football.
What if right there. Because
fun
I mean
fact, I don't know if I've told you this, but multiple WrestleMania main events have come from former Vikings defensive linemen. Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns, baby.
That's right. That is very correct. The zero of them have come from Omos, but I do think it's I remember him being in Madden. Like Madden for that year is like a 60 rated player because he, you know, was not expected to make the roster at all. I don't even think they had like an actual photo of him. They just had like the generic player pick. But I think you can go back and edit his stats up to be great. But I mean, it is a very intriguing, like what would a whole lot of different things have been like if he decided to actually commit himself to professional wrestling and, you know, or I'm sorry, professional football, words are hard as is thinking. And like actually like became good at that. Like, you know, not only would that affect possibly him possibly going back to WWE or not, but also to UFC. You know, that's a big what if right there if UFC never got him, because for a while he was a huge star and you could make an argument that at his peak he was the best heavyweight of all time, I think. You know, Fedor did a lot more for a lot longer, but you know, in terms of just peak, because Brock was facing like top tier guys every time out until his guts rotted away. But
Lesnar never fought anywhere close to 100% because of the diverticulitis.
Yeah, that really affected his career real bad. But like they built, I think, a lot of UFC 100 around him, and that was a massive gate. And he just did a bunch of business. In fact, if you have not seen it, I strongly recommend looking up his post-win promo when he first won the UFC Heavyweight Championship. One of the all-time great, just like, I'm going off script and I don't care things I've ever seen, especially because I think it was Coors Light that was the sponsor for UFC at the time, and he just buries it as part of his promo. Great stuff.
Yeah, Lesnar was a special man. He really, really was.
And I mean, he still kind of is the thing, but like, I just, you know, it is kind of sad what like the past 4 years or whatever have done to his career, where he's just like in this really bland spot with WWE, and like Brock Lesnar should be anything but bland.
No, I agree 100%. I would love to see him come to AEW and just do some Haas matches.
Just imagine the online discourse.
Oh my gosh, I'd love it. It would
people think Chris Jericho doesn't put anyone over.
Brock will put you over if he's getting paid enough money and it makes sense.
Oh yeah, he will. Yeah, but
he's not losing to Fuego del Sol.
No,
he'll probably lose to Powerhouse Hobbs.
You'd approach him to like put over, you know, like make Peter Avalon look strong for half a match. He'd probably be like, "Are you fucking kidding me? No,
yeah.
Not a chance." Anyways, that's it for me on the show. I don't think we got anything else to discuss today.
I don't think so either. I've got a dog that wants to play with his little burger toy, as Fred has already seen me throw. But
it's not a euphemism.
No, it is literally a toy, stuffed toy, that it looks like a burger. You can find me on Twitter at The Real Forno and all my work at The Vikings Wire, which you can find both on Twitter and on the website, VikingsWire.com. You can find Fred on Twitter at Flagrant Wrestling, and that is with an R, not a W. Wrestling like the Southern Territory. And then you can find us if you are listening on the Voice of Wrestling podcast feed. Thank you very much. Please support us by subscribing to our own. You can just search The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. And you can find us on Discord or send us an email at hungypod@gmail.com. We will answer any and all questions on the show, just like we did for Matthew earlier today about Brock Lesnar. Thank you all for listening very much. Next week, we may have a bonus show, as Fred alluded to earlier, talking about just this pay-per-view, and then we'll go into kind of the show after Revolution to talk about what the future of this company is going to be coming out of the show. Until then, have yourselves a wonderful day. Go watch the Underwear Olympics like I'm starting to right now, and Skol Vikings.
Rest in peace, Wayne Shorter.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen. If you haven't already, we are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.